So just going back, though, to all the different names you have for the stages of development and why, and it's not just to confuse us. I know that, Ken.
Yeah.
So we have, you know, levels,
yeah,
structures,
right,
waves.
Right.
What's going on
stages,
here?
Levels, right, yeah. Psychotic confusion on my part. Each of those gives us sort of a different flavor of what's going on, and all of them are important. And also each of them has a kind of a little bit of a drawback. And so usually what happens under those circumstances is you just kind of throw all the terms on the table and beg for the mercy of the reader, you know? Level is in a sense okay, but level is pretty rigid. I mean, it's just sort of clunky and it's there, and it gives you some sort of the indication that these levels are somehow real things that are just sitting out there, like levels in this building. So I can say I'm on the third floor, you know, and there's a real thing called the third floor, and you go right there and there it is, and the elevator takes you there and all that. No stage conception is that precise. It just doesn't happen, even though developmentalists often will say I'm at this level or that level or whatnot. But you have to be really careful about that. Even if you take something like Carol Gilligan's research in moral development, and if you're using six stages, and you ask somebody and they get a response, and let's say that they're, quote, at stage four, all that really means is that about 50% of the time they give a stage four response, and about 25% of the time they give a stage five response, and about 25% of the time they give a stage three response. So these are really just sort of probabilities of the way people are going to respond. It's just not that rigid at all. And so the notion of waves, Howard Gardner tended to make that popular. And it's just a way to soften it and say these are sort of like ocean waves in a sense. They're there. Nobody's saying they aren't there. But they really are kind of hard to say when they start and when they end, and they kind of come in as waves. And you also can't say how many waves are there in the ocean. I mean, it doesn't really make sense. And then so you really can't pin down and say there are only six stages of moral development and stuff like that. These are conceptual constructs that we use to understand these things. So waves sort of gives the notion they do kind of roll in like that, and it's kind of nice. Stages suggests, stage is kind of a version of wave, but stage means it unfolds in a sequence. And that's true enough. As we were saying, the whole point about these stages is that you can't reverse them. And they're very like atoms, molecules, cells. You can't have cells first. Without molecules or atoms, doesn't work. A real stage means that the higher stages incorporate the previous stages as components. So atoms are incorporated into molecules, molecules are incorporated, and that's why you can't reverse that sequence. Nothing you can do will reverse that sequence. Same with letters, words, sentences, paragraphs. You cannot have paragraphs before sentences and words. Nobody has ever done it and won't happen. That's a real stage conception. So that's important. That's what these stage conceptions are. You can't have Gilligan's stage three response before stage two and one. You never get somebody giving universal care before selfish and care. It doesn't happen. So that's important because it's an evolutionary unfolding that it can't be run backwards. Well, it can be run backwards if you've already developed, but then that's called regression. But it doesn't start with a higher stage first and then run backwards. So all of those are giving us a flavor of what's going on. Levels in which some of them really are higher or lower responses. Stages, they really do unfold in a sequence. Waves, but it's not rigid. It's very fluid and flowing, and they overlap and all that kind of stuff. And structure just means the actual configuration of whatever the level or wave or stage is. And that's a kind of technical term that came from structuralists, who were the first to try to define what made a particular stage what it was. And it's very technical conversation, but they're really looking, it's a very holistic concept, and they're trying to define the unity of one of these responses, what the actual structure of it is. And I would go into that, but we would all fall asleep, including me.
Okay. Don't want that.
I tend to use stages and waves most often because I think they're the least misleading.
So we've talked about the stages in terms of human moral development.
Right.
And you said we can apply these stages to lots of things, but not all things.
Right.
So what can we apply a stage model to, and what can't we apply it to?
Right. We can even take, let's even take stages themselves and show that even within that, so much is left open. So if we take the moral sequence again, Carol Gilligan's, which was also investigated by Kohlberg, and her three stages are variations on what she would call pre-conventional, conventional, and post-conventional. And that's a nice kind of phrasing, because pre-conventional, when an infant is born, it hasn't yet been socialized or conventionalized. So its responses are pre-conventional. But soon it learns what's right and wrong. It learns to interact. It becomes verbal. And it becomes sort of a conventional, conformist moral response. And as it continues to grow, it can reflect on its own culture. This usually happens in adolescence or later. And decide, wait a minute, the Bible said the earth is created in 6 days. I don't know about that. And you start to become reflexive, self-reflexive. You criticize your own culture. And that's post-conventional. You're trying to move beyond it. So those are sort of those three kind of waves that unfold. Now, that says a lot in a certain sense, because it tells us that people tend to move through these stages. People themselves can reflect on their own lives and sort of see that this might have happened. But if you're at stage two, which is the care or conformist or conventional stage, it doesn't say what you're actually thinking there or what you're doing there. I mean, there's all sorts of ways you could be a conformist. I mean, you can be member of the Nazis, you can be a KKK, you can be a member of the Rotary Club, you can be, you know, all these things are left undetermined by the fact that you're simply at that stage. It's really a very, very broad, loose concept. And so you really can't pigeonhole people very easily by doing that, because some stage two conventional care people are like the Red Cross in certain areas or the Boy Scouts. They're within a particular culture, but they're doing really, really good works. So even right there, those things can't be determined by those stage sequences. When we move out of that to these other things, like states of consciousness, that's stages of consciousness is one thing. States of consciousness is another. And states become very, very, very important, particularly when you're talking about things like spirituality. Because a lot of people in their spiritual orientation want to have a spiritual experience. They want to find God. They want to find Goddess. They want to experience it. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to have churchy religion. They want a deep experiential realization of some of these higher, wider, deeper states of being. And that's a state. And to the extent that it is a state of consciousness, so I might be going on a nature walk and I have this incredible experience of nature mysticism, where it's just like this incredible sense of oneness with everything that's arising moment to moment. It completely changes my life when I have that experience. The experience comes, stays a bit, and it goes, usually. That's a state. It's not showing stages. And it wasn't pre-conventional, and then conventional, and then post-conventional, and none of those sort of categories work for states. So that's another kind of conflict you get into around spirituality, because a lot of traditions are very good at inducing these spiritual states, or drugs are good at introducing non-ordinary states, but they don't stick. And ultimately what you want to do is have states converted into permanent traits. So altered states to permanent traits. And that means development. That means you have to turn them into a permanent competence. And that's a stage conception. So again, both of them are important, but you really can't reduce one to the other. And a lot of people really don't. They don't want to go in for a long practice and go into stages of development. And that's fine. It's totally fine. A really profound spiritual experience, as I said, can completely change your life and give it an enormous amount of richness and transparency and vitality and depth that wasn't present. We just don't want to exclude any of these categories in any integrally informed approach.
So we could apply stages of development into all of the four quadrants as well?
Yeah. We've talked about in the upper left of needs and morals and so on. In the upper right, what you're really looking at, and to some extent in the lower right, which means the objective world of it and its and organisms and environments and all the things you can see out there in the objective world. Now, those things have interiors, incidentally. But when you look at them in the exterior, we're looking at us right now as objects, as third persons. So we're not looking at our interiors. We're not looking at I or we. We're looking at you as an objective organism. You weigh so many pounds. You're so tall. You have so many molecules and atoms. You have so much genetic material. Your brain is doing this. There's so much dopamine. That's all third person it. And that's what science studies. And when science studies the objective world of its, it finds evolution. That's stages. There are stages of evolution in every species out there. And you just look at the great sort of tree of life in that sense. And it's a whole stage conception, unfolding of increasing differentiation and integration at large. And biologists actually have what they call clades and grades. And those are lines and levels. Grade is what it sounds like, levels. It's a grade. How much do you have in it? And clade means a similarity. That's a line. And so you can actually trace whether you're looking at parasites or chimpanzees or whatnot, clades and grades that evolve over time. And it's the same thing we're talking about in terms of levels and lines, only in the objective world. universe started apparently with a Big Bang, which is just one singular mass of God knows what. And then that's differentiated and integrated into all this material that we see around us. Those are all evolutionary unfolding. And so actually science has looked at these sort of evolutionary stages much more detail than the interiors. And it's sort of what you get when if you take any biology or evolutionary ecology course, it's sort of what you get. There's stellar evolution, stars evolve and go through stages. I mean, it's, you know, pretty standard scientific materialist account, but that's what they look at. It's less interesting to people on a personal growth path because it doesn't really apply to what they can do to their own interiors. It's sort of what you're handed. I mean, here we are in this objective body that's evolved over 500,000 years. And now what we do on the inside is what we have control over mostly.